This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, good morning. Isn't this a great place? It almost makes me feel like I need to wear skinny jeans to talk here. But we won't say any more about that. Your talents, your responsibility. Well, we had a great introduction this morning, and I feel like you were given an incredible gift to be in the session this morning, and then now you've chosen this one. This is now going a little bit more individualistic, and I want you to think about you here this morning and your life and what you have in your hand. When God called Moses, it was the burning bush. Remember, he was out in the desert and he saw this bush burning, and I guess that was normal enough, because it's when he noticed that it wasn't burning up that he went over to look at it, and God said, take off your shoes, where you're standing is holy ground. You know that story well. And God, in his conversation to Moses, said, what's that in your hand? And Moses said, a rod. And God said, that'll work. Good, I can use that. Let's go. And so this is all about what's in your hand. And we're going to use the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, 14 to 30. I invite you to go there in your Bibles and just keep your Bible open if you have it with you. I didn't print the passage on the screen. I maybe should have done that, but if you have your Bible and you can keep it kind of open, we'll probably refer back to this different times. But in verse 14, Matthew 25, 14, it says this: for the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. Let's stop. The kingdom of heaven is like. Now, in my Bible, those words are red, meaning that Jesus spoke them. And whenever I'm reading in red, and I see the phrase, the kingdom of heaven is like, or the kingdom of God is like, I stop. And I kind of meditate about what's going to be said next. Because we've got Jesus talking here. Jesus who lived in heaven. Jesus who created time and space. We're told everything that's created was created by him. Nothing exists without him. So this is Jesus who knows heaven. He knows how things work, and he understands the kingdom of heaven. And he's trying to explain it to us earthlings, what it's like. And so he uses a story. And he tells us the story, and he says, that's what it's like. Okay, so we're going to go through the story, and then we have another story that we're going to consider at the end. It's sort of like when I was teaching high school. I was about 20 years old. Some of my students were older than I was. And I was teaching high school simply because I knew English, and nobody else in our jungle town did. So I got to teach English, the English courses at the high school, which is a whole other story. But I told my students one time that when I was a boy and went to school in Canada, you know, in the wintertime, it would get so cold, we'd go outside, and we'd make a rink. We'd put water on the ground and pack down the snow, and then we'd skate on it, and we'd have this big patch of ice that we'd play hockey on, and they'd just be like, no, but you lie. It's not true. It doesn't get that cold. And I said, yeah, it does. Honestly, you leave a bucket of water out on the front porch, in the morning it's solid ice. No, don't believe it. And I think often that happens in our world. That happens in our churches, and that happens in my life. God says something, it's so obvious, and I just don't get it. I'm like, no. Back to verse 15. So this man, traveling into a far country, called his servants, delivered their goods. You're familiar with the story. He gave to one 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1, and to every man according to his several ability. I'll just say that again. To every man according to his several ability. Don't you love King James? And straightway took his journey. Then he that had received 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained another 2. And he that had received 1 talent went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought the other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents, and behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, pretty much goes the same way. Jump down to verse 24. And then he which had received 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee, that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and I went and hid thy talent in the earth. And lo, here you go. There, thou hast, that is thine. I brought it back. And the Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I had not strawed. Thou hast therefore had to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have an abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. End of story. I see in these verses 5 principles that I would like to go over today and talk about a little bit. I don't have handouts for you. Take notes if you like. Here are the 5 principles. So we're talking about what is that in your hand, thinking about you. First principle that I see in these verses is that effort is needed to develop your talents. It takes effort. The man that got 5 talents and the one that got 2 had to work. Had to work on it. They weren't told how they were supposed to double their talents, but they were expected to. So it takes effort. And I saw this the other day, that effort is the best indicator of success. And I would like to add to that the word sometimes. Effort sometimes is the best indicator of interest. How interested are we? How much effort are we willing to put into it? Connor McDavid, I think, is a hockey player. I forget who he plays for. You know how much I pay attention to that stuff. But what really stood out to me is last summer, he practiced all summer his one-timers. And that's where you can take a puck that shot across the ice and kind of slap shot it right into the net wherever you want it to go. Is that right? Kind of, ish. All right. He worked on it all summer. He's known for this. This is kind of his specialty as a hockey player, but he worked on it all summer long because it wasn't good enough. He needed it to be better for the next season. Effort sometimes is the greatest indicator of our interest. We are given what we need. We are given exactly what we need. And as I look across this room, what are there here? Maybe 150, 200 people. Everyone was given what they need for the job that you're supposed to do. Your job is to add some effort to it. We are given talents according to our ability. And I find it interesting that the Bible says that. I don't think I'd be able to say that myself. I don't have enough authority or wisdom to be able to say, make that statement. But you think about it. We are given talents according to our ability. Now, I don't know if you have ever stopped and said, why can't I be more like him? I sure have. Growing up, I wanted blonde hair. And now all I want is hair. You know, why can't I be more like him? Why can't... I think we've all been there, right? But we were given talents according to our ability. And you have something that God wants to use. You have something that the church needs. Your church needs it. Okay? So I'm glad you're here. We are not given the same or equal amount of talents. And that is okay. And again, it doesn't seem fair. I teach grade 7 and 8 in Canada. And one of the first things I tell them at the beginning of the year is that I'm going to be as fair as I can, but remember, life isn't fair. I teach 15 students. There is no way I can treat them all the same. And they wouldn't want me to. And God doesn't ask the same things of you and me. In the introduction, was mentioned how my wife and I, we raised 6 little Guatemalan boys from broken homes. And we went to visit them last week. And that was amazing to see how God, their father, has taken them and is taking them and is leading them. Yeah, it was amazing. But when we were raising those boys, you know, it was kind of strange to see a white man, North American, and his wife with 6 little boys that were totally different color, and that was a lot of fun. But people would say to me, you know, people should do this. More people should do this. Just take boys from broken homes into their home and just raise them like their own boys. That's what more people should do. And I'd say, you know, I don't know. I know it was what we were supposed to do, but I don't know that anybody else should necessarily do it. It's sort of like Abraham was called to go, and he obeyed, and it was counted to him for righteousness. But that doesn't mean we're all supposed to go. And Noah was called to build an ark, and he did. I don't know a lot of people building arks. Some people did, and it's a good thing. You know, I think it's a tremendous witness, but we're not all building arks, right? We are not given the same or equal amount of talents. And finally, fifthly, we will be held accountable. I struggle a little bit with this last guy that was only given one talent. I feel sorry for him. I honestly do. My heart goes out to him. We'll come back to him a little bit later. I'm glad he's part of the story because it is sobering for each one of us to consider that we were given talents and abilities, we're asked to use them for God, and we will be held accountable. In the description, we talked a little bit about this. I asked this question. I'm just going to sit down for a little minute here. And I'd like you to participate with me as if you were my class, one of my 15, 7th and 8th graders. I want you to think for a minute. Are you a one-talent person, a two-talent person, or would you consider yourself a 5-talent person? You get that number. Okay, because I want to know. We're Mennonites, right? I might be a, I don't know. Am I one or two? I'm not even sure if I'm a one-talent person. I don't know. Do you have the number? You got this? I'm not going to ask what number, but if you have a number in your mind, would you just put your hand up? You found your number. All right, you found your number? Good. Here we go. Oh, I went too far. Let me back up. I'm going to make the shocking statement before we go on. All right? Everyone in this room is a 5-talent person. Every single one of you is a five-talent person. Now, that may not have been the number in your mind, but that's what you are. And I want to prove it to you. Because maybe you don't believe it, but you are. I believe that I'm a five-talent person, and I'm not proud of it. I'm humbled by that. Because I know that I will be held accountable for being a five-talent person. The stakes are pretty high if you read the story and you think about the truth that it says to us. One thing we have as an Anabaptist Mennonite people is education and training. How many of you went to a Christian school and you had Christian teachers at your Christian school? That is an incredible gift. You're like, it was just a little school. They didn't have the programs that the big public school had down the road. We didn't have a basketball team like they did. Didn't even have jerseys or a gym, probably. You have an incredible gift in your education and your training. We had what we called a Christian school in Guatemala, and I worked there for several years. We had students using the Rotten Staff Reading Program, and we picked that one because it was the only curriculum in Spanish. If any of you like to write or have a gift of languages, start translating school books. We need them. We used Rotten Staff, and I'll be honest, I struggle a little bit with using Rotten Staff in our schools here in North America because our children have, or they're supposed to have, family devotions at home. They have Sunday school. They have vacation summer Bible school, unless there's COVID. They have a lot of Bible, and then they go to school and they read more Bible. And I think sometimes it can actually harden them too, the Bible, because it's not delicious anymore. It's kind of hammered in. But we used Rod and Staff, and it was wonderful because a lot of the kids at our Christian school did not come from Christian homes. Some of them came from Catholic homes, some of them came from broken homes, and a lot of them just came from homes. And they would learn about the Bible. And then they started challenging their preachers. Because they would be told at church that, well, Jonathan and David were brothers. No, they weren't. And the kids knew it from their reading. They'd been through the program for 4 or 5 years. You have an incredible education and training. Heritage of Truth is what we started to talk about. You have, if you grew up in a Christian home and went to a Christian school and attended summer Bible school sometimes, you probably have the knowledge of the Bible, a knowledge of the Bible that is greater than a lot of the pastors around the world. They're leading churches with what they know. But they weren't born in it. And they didn't have the incredible opportunity of hearing it as a child from their dad and from their school teacher and from their minister week after week. As a Mennonite and Anabaptist community, we have an incredible gift of truth. Makes me think of what the old bishop said in Belize, and he was native to Belize, and that's why he got away with it, I think. But he said this, I'll never forget. He said, as Mennonites, we have so much truth. If we would practice even half of the truth we know, it would be a good thing. Financial resource and network as an Anabaptist community. I gave this talk many years ago, and I said, you know, if we wanted to start a mission in New York City, in Manhattan, we'd have the money to do it. That we would. And I heard recently that there is one, I think a coffee shop. It's been going for a couple of years. We heard this morning that we have 3,000 times. No, that was the people, right? How many times was it? I should have taken notes on that one. 9,000 times the financial resource that it would take to fulfill the Great Commission. No, we've got the money. But we have money that if you step outside of our communities, people only dream of. If you go to a developing country, it's impossible, the amount of financial resource that we have. In your local church, in your local community, you know people. And I think sometimes in God's work, we're just called to be bridges. We're aware of the need. We know where the source or the answer to that need is. And we just have to get those two together. And we're a bridge. This is maybe one you didn't think of. You have a citizenship, there we go, that will take you just about anywhere in the world. If you have an American passport or could get one, there are very few places you can't go. If you have a Canadian one, even better. How many people are Canadian? Yeah, there are some places you can go that the Americans can't. Did you know that? Yeah. I have a friend in Guatemala. She's a nurse, a registered nurse, knows way more than I ever will. And she has a good friend who's American. Her friend got married a couple years ago, asked her to be the maid of honor at her wedding here in the States. And so she looked into getting a ticket. Yep, she could afford the ticket. Then she needed a visa. Her visa was denied. Her friend had to find some other maid of honor at her wedding. She simply couldn't go to the States. She had enough money. She has enough education, but they wouldn't give her a visa. My point is that there are a lot of Christian people that would be willing to go, but can't. And I wish they could. But you can go. There's really no place you can't go. You have abilities, skills, and a work ethic. We have an incredible gift given to us by our parents that teaches how to work. And I think it's being lost a little bit in our generation. You can kind of see by the lack of hair and the color thereof that I'm getting older, and I'm realizing the value of work. And I'm a little concerned that we teach our children how to work. And we teach them that work is a good thing. It's a gift. And allow them to do hands-on things. A man much older and wiser than me, when our boys were little, said, get them a jigsaw. Get them a jigsaw and some wood. They're not going to cut a hand off with a jigsaw, but they can make stuff. How many of you could take a chainsaw and cut down a tree? So you could start the chainsaw and you could cut the tree down and you could take the limbs off and you could cut it off. How many of you could do that? The girls are welcome to raise their hands. Sure you could. How many of you can drive a tractor? Okay. How many of you can drive a car or a pickup truck? Okay, how many of you can drive a standard car or pickup truck? Manual, for those who don't understand the standard word. All right, there we go. How many of you could take some plans and build a birdhouse using some saws and tools? All right, you can nail that together. All right, good. How many of you can follow a recipe and bake a cake? Yeah. How many of you could pour a concrete floor and it'd be level enough for me to walk on? Okay, that's great. great. How many of you can weld? See, that's amazing. Because a lot of my friends that I grew up with in Guatemala could do maybe one or two of those things. But one or two. I mentioned that I was with my boys last week, and this is really humbling. They said to me, you know, all of us can weld. You taught us how to weld. Well, see, the homes that they grew up in, they didn't have a welder, and if there would have been one, they would have only allowed anybody that was 25 years or older to use it, because these are commodities, right? They said thank you after many, many years. Thank you for everything you taught us. If there's drywall to do, we can do it. Three of them work in flooring, and that's interesting because we did a little bit of flooring, but not much. I hardly know how to tile a floor, but I can. And it's something that my dad taught me, and my dad learned it because his father was a subcontractor, I think, or maybe a contractor. And my dad, as a little boy, 9 and 10 years old, this is going way back, and my dad is here, actually, at Reach. You can spot an older version of me, and it's my dad. He's a little shorter. He would follow the plumber around. He would follow the electrician around and the concrete guys around. And God was preparing him at 9 years old for what he was going to do in his life. And I'd love to tell you his story, but that would take a lot longer than we have time. This is one I got from you. I've given this talk before. And I had 5 talents, and we've already seen 5. And then I opened it up, like I'm about to do, and I said, what is another talent that we have as Mennonite Anabaptist people that the people world over maybe don't have? And somebody mentioned this one, and it's a very, very good one. Absolutely. How many of you can speak English? Do you know that that's a ticket into some of the countries where you can't go with your passport? So your American passport might not be enough to take you there, but if you can speak English and you're willing to teach it at a high school or college level, they'll take you because they want to learn English. Talk a little bit about teaching high school. When I was 20, I taught at a school in their upper program. So it was in their careers program. It was called the School of Commerce. And 5 of my students, as teenagers, graduated from the School of Commerce and started working at the banks in the local area in our developing towns there in the jungle, and 5 of them ended up being bank managers. Guess where I went 10 years later when I needed to get a loan for somebody? One of my former students. I'd sit across his swanky desk and I'd say, you know what? He needs some help. Can you help him? He's like, yeah. Like, you want me to help him? I said, please. That's all I had to say. God opens doors. Any other things that we should add to the list? What are gifts that we as Mennonite Anabaptist people have? They've just been given to us, and we don't even realize that we have them in our pocket.
Hospitality.
Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that one. Absolutely. He said hospitality. Your mom taught you this one. How to make food for 16 or 20 people. How many of you have a table at home that you can pull it apart and you put boards in there? How many of you have one of those? Do you know that a lot of people the world over have never heard of that? They have no idea. Growing up in Canada, when I was 10, the people straight across the street were not Christians. They are now. But we had a good relationship with them, and we were back and forth a lot, and they became really close friends. So when I got married, I crossed the street, and I took them a wedding invitation. And they said, you're getting married, Stephen. Wow, that's amazing. Where does time go? Is it a big wedding? I said, well, not really. Not real big. They said, like, how many people? I said, 250, 300 people. They just about dropped over. She said, I don't know 100 people. And she wasn't exaggerating. We've been given a gift of hospitality. Thank you. What else?
What we don't know how to do, we know someone who does.
What we don't know how to do, we know somebody that does. And before we miss it, who else?
Four-part harmony, four-part singing,
yes. We have connections. We know more than 100 people, don't we? Four-part singing, that is an incredible gift that we take for granted, and we must keep it alive in our communities. I always got to teach music. Now, I'm not a musical person. I can't really read notes like my dad can, nor can I lead singing like he can. That's his ability. But I had more ability in that area just from growing up in my dad's home and singing out of the church hymnal for family devotions at 7 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, continue. What else do we have? These are great. I need to remember to write them down and include them in my list for next time.
The ability to manage finances.
Yes. Ability to manage finances and money. Yeah. Something that it's just kind of there. It's part of the package. And if you don't have it when you're born, you'll get it by the time you're 10. We will move on. I guess we should have moved to that one before I asked that question. So I'd like you to just close your eyes for a moment and think about what's that in your hand? What do you have? We've pointed out way more than five things that you have. You're a five-talent person. And what is God asking you to do with? What is that in your hand? Moses had a rod. That was all he needed. God said, I can use that. I'll take that rod. We don't have time to go through all of those, but up there on the screen you see a list of things that rod was involved in. How many of you are going to be here tomorrow? Okay, so sorry for you. You'll have to listen to me again tomorrow morning. In the general session, I'm going to tell kind of my story, stories of my story, stories of my life. And there, for the honor and glory of God, you will see what God does with just one person. And this room is full this morning. I am so excited about what God will do with the people here, with the thing you've got in your hand. It's special to you. Moses used his rod for his current job, and that was enough for God to use. God got behind it, and it's not because it was Moses' rod, but it's because God was using that rod. That rod did all kinds of wild and amazing things. It turned into a snake. It parted the waters when his people needed an escape. And I would like to say to you, focus on your current job. Focus on your home church. Look around you. For years, I was involved in a boys' ministry, a boys' ranch in Guatemala. And I would say to people, and I say to you today, you do not have to go to Guatemala or anywhere else to reach out to a hurting young man. He's probably sitting a few benches behind you or in front of you in your church. Find him. That's where you start. Start at home. You may actually sit at the same breakfast table as him. You might be his older brother. Reach out. That's where I feel like I started to learn to help, was just cleaning up the garage with my younger brother. It was great. We had a great relationship and still do. We're best friends. So here's a question for you. What would have happened if Moses would have refused to give God what was in his hand? What do you think would have happened?
Nothing.
Nothing. The children of Israel would still be in Egypt. Maybe. That's a great answer. And we should talk, maybe over lunch. This is what I think. I think God would have found somebody else. God's work will get done. He is inviting you to join him. How do I say this so that it makes sense? It makes sense in my mind. I'll just say it, see what you can do with it. He doesn't need you. He doesn't need you. He wants you. He's given you the ability and everything you need, but his work will go on. He will find someone else. If you talk to some people, I'm known for a school in Guatemala. And you know, there are times in my life, if I'm honest, I can get a little bit proud of what happened there. I got involved when there were 10 students in the school and stayed with it until there were 235 over a spread of, I don't know, 10 or 12 years. It's a temptation to get proud about that and what happened and the way God moved. But I'll be honest with you, if I wouldn't have said, sure, I'll do that, God, I believe God would have done it through somebody else. There'd be a school there. I really believe there would. And yet I wonder sometimes if what's your name? Omar? What Omar says is true, then maybe nothing would happen. So think about that, because I don't have a straight up answer to that question. I just would say to you, don't miss the chance. When God says, let's do it, say, okay. All you need is what you've got in your hand. People in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, heroes of the faith, past and present, are known for these things. And you may want to write them down. These are things that you can do. These are things that you can take effort to improve your ability. Compassion, generosity, hospitality. God's people are aware. They're aware of what's going on. They're aware of the needs. Have you ever met that person that can't see work? There's work right in front of them, but they can't see it. And if you don't know what I mean, talk to the foreman of a construction crew. He's had a high school student somewhere. You know, he'll trip over the 2x4 before he'll pick it up and carry it to where it needs to go. And I think that's us sometimes as people and as a community and as a church. We're not aware of the incredible needs that are just 2 blocks down. God's people are aware. God's people take action. We heard this morning about risk, and risk is a real thing. And God's people are willing to take the risk. God's people are willing, and they show a willingness. We must move along. Oh, that's why. I can see it, but you can't. I better look at my screen a little more here. Sorry about that. Does anybody need that? I can back up here. Compassion, generosity, hospitality, awareness, action, and willingness. What is happening around us as we hold on to what's in our hand instead of giving it to God? Somebody asked me one time how I got to where I am. I said, by simply closing my eyes and saying yes. And that's scary. But God gave me that ability, I guess, to just kind of trust. My dad helped me with that one too. And that's another story for another day. Why was the Lord so hard on the servant that buried his talent? I feel sorry for him. I honestly do. He had one talent. He probably already felt a little bit less than the one that got 5 or 2. Did you ever think of it that it was his one shot? Like if he lost it, he lost it all. I'm going to make a statement here that I need you to think about. God will never let that happen. If you're using your talents for his glory, it will not happen. You can trust and you won't lose it all. It may seem like you're losing it all, but if it's for him, if it's honestly, sincerely for him, it's not going to roll back on you. Just invest it. It was his one shot, and he got scared, and he hit it. I would take you now to the last part of the chapter. Here it says a parable. I can see how it is a parable. I look at it more like prophecy that hasn't happened yet. Okay? And I want to read a few of the verses here. In Matthew 25, verse 31 and on. Again, the verses in my Bible are in red. Jesus is talking. Jesus, who knows all things, who knows the past, who sees the future, who knows when it's going to be, says, "When the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats." Now, I'm not a farmer. I can hardly milk a cow, with a milker or without one. But I know the difference between sheep and goats. I could do that. If you give me a pen of animals and say, put the sheep over here and the goats over there, it would probably take me a while, but I at least know the difference. The point here is that that is how easily God will know, Jesus knows, the true ones from the fake ones. "And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left. And then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." Would you agree that this is prophecy? This has not happened yet. Do you believe it will happen? I believe it will happen. It's going to go just like this. He's going to separate them, and then he's going to say, "For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me." Why was the Lord so hard on that servant? Because what we are asked to give and what we are asked to do are very simple things that we all have enough of. You have enough food to give to one more person. You have enough drink to give them a drink of water. You have enough room to take one more person in. You have enough clothes that you can spare a coat or a pair of pants or a shirt. And we all have 24 hours in a day. We have time. So he's not asking for things that are out of this world. He is asking you to give what you've already got. Salvation is a gift, just like the talents. I believe everyone in this room has received both. We have salvation and we have talents. Sorry, what are we going to do with them? We will be judged by how we use them. What is that in your hand? God bless you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.